And now, live from the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Well, it's Thursday, May the 17th, 2018. I'm David Knight. We have a stack of stuff here. I'm looking at big Second Amendment news, looking at drug prohibition news, I'm looking at the Iran sanctions and the blowback in Europe, as well as China making moves against Taiwan and the U.S. making counter moves there. We have a big update on socialism. It may be failing in Venezuela, but it is not failing with millennials. Millennial candidates and millennials themselves are really jumping on the bandwagon of socialism, even as that country collapses to the extent that Brazil, at least one province of Brazil, the Brazilian president says, there's no way we're going to close the border. That is unthinkable. However, one of the governors of a Brazilian province says they're coming in at such a rate that we can't control this. It's about 10% of the population came in last year as refugees from Venezuela. A number, 50,000 people into a province that had only a population of 500,000. And so in just 1 year, they had a number of people come in that was equivalent to the population. This is not about race or anything else. The lady said, the governor there is female. She said, we can't support this. It's overloading all of our health systems, our education system, and so forth. Yeah, that's exactly what happens. You eventually run out of other people's money, and then they run out of the country, and then the country that they run into runs out of money because of their socialist programs. That is the purpose of all of this. And we're also going to take a look at some updates on what's going on with the Democrats' porn superheroes. Porn girl and lawyer man are back in the news. And it's kind of amazing. It kind of sets off a whole string of First Amendment issues because of the way that he is coming after any organizations that report on anything about what he's doing. If he doesn't like the report, he comes back and threatens them with a lawsuit. Does that sound familiar? Have we kind of heard a lot of that here at InfoWars? Yeah, you go in and you talk about stuff that's in somebody's public bio, or you comment on what they are saying publicly, and you're bullying somebody, or you're slandering somebody. It's like, you put this stuff out. This is your bio I'm reading. You don't want to be affiliated with these groups and don't put it in your bio. And then you wound up getting sued over this. Even CNN is coming back and saying, I don't think there's anything wrong with this reporting from the Daily Caller. It looks solid to me. And when he comes back and complains, calling people various profane names and threatening to slander some of the reporters publicly on The View, when he comes back and pushes against that, he doesn't come back and say, you said this and that is untrue, specifically untrue because of this. I mean, you do something like that, and news media organizations, if they got it wrong, they will retract it. Because the standard is maliciousness. If you maliciously say something false about somebody, that's why there is the time period there to retract something if, in fact, it is incorrect, to show that there is no maliciousness there. But that's not the way this lawyer is operating. So it's going to be kind of interesting to take a look at that. To follow up on the story that I talked about yesterday, and you can see the report on our YouTube channel, Real News with David Knight, I talked about the daycare and terror scandal and welfare. It's a kind of a combination of all these. The welfare state, also the Democrat Party. Don't forget the Democrat Party because they're part of the welfare state. They're part of the massive community of Somali refugees that have moved into Minneapolis. And this is basically the power base of Keith Ellison. And we got an update on that as well. Also in Michigan, something has come up there in the gubernatorial race. The Democrat candidate there, who, again, is a Muslim, they have identified a voting bloc. Didn't we say something about the open borders and the crisis and the chaos being created throughout the Middle East, that the intention was to bring people here for conflict, but also for a massive voter bloc? That kind of plays out, doesn't it, in Michigan and Minnesota. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Thursday, May the 17th, 2018. I'm David Knight. Yesterday, I talked about a story that had broken on a couple of outlets. It's getting more traction as the days go by. Story I talked about yesterday was on New American. That's the first place I saw it. Now, WND has a follow-up on this. This is the daycare slash welfare slash Democrat Party slash Somali jihadi story. This is $100 million in just the last year in cash sent to jihadis in Somalia, the El Shabaab. And every time I say that, I always think about the cartoon with Quick Draw McGraw. He was the villain, and he had El Kabong, I think it was, where he, this flashback to my childhood. Never mind. El Shabaab is not a cartoon organization. It is a terrorist organization. It is a jihadi organization. And this system of transmitting cash back, these people, because they're Muslims, they're allowed to carry massive amounts of cash in suitcases and send it back. They call it a hawala. We call it an exemption, a double standard. None of the rest of us of any group are going to be allowed to carry massive suitcases of cash at the airport. They'll just confiscate it. We've seen this happen with one of the first cases of civil asset forfeiture I saw was a black man who had a landscaping business. He was he booked a flight. He paid for it by cash. He had a suitcase full of cash. This is in the early 90s, 25 years ago. And he was going to fly to an area, pay for the stuff that he was bringing back. It was plants and things like that. And he was going to pay for that in cash and rent the truck to drive it back. So it was a one-way trip. So that's why he was flying there, doing it at the last minute. They just confiscated his money. It was like $9,000. Charged the money with possible suspicion of being involved in a drug deal, even though he could document that he had done this type of thing many times before. But if you're a Muslim, you can put $1 million in a suitcase and you can send it to Somalia and the El Shababs will take a cut of that. And then the question is, as they started to look at this, they said, where are these people on welfare, these Somali refugees? Where are they getting all this money? And it turns out there's a massive daycare center welfare fraud, where the people will go to the daycare centers that's all paid for by the welfare state. Yes, we'll put your child in daycare and we'll pay for it. And so they show up to daycare, sometimes with their kids, sometimes without. Sometimes they just show up to take a cut of the cash because they have signed their kid up on the roll and the kid's not going to daycare. It's not a real daycare. And they give the parents a cut in cash. Yeah, that's the scam that's going on. So the taxpayers are paying for this. They've got at least 10 Minnesota daycare centers. This is in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. And this is where Keith Ellison, the deputy chair of the DNC, that's where his power base is. His power base is this Somali community. This is the guy who, when he became a congressman, refused to do the oath of office with his hand on a Bible. He said, no, I'm not going to use a Bible. Give me a Quran. And this is the guy who is now the deputy chair of the DNC. What is it with the DNC? You know, we just had Debbie Wasserman Schultz. They're still looking at information about that, although Jeff Sessions is AWOL. I don't know where Jeff Sessions is on this massive scandal with Debbie Wasserman Schultz and what happened there with the Wan brothers. But you had, for example, 6,000 logins into the computers of various congressmen. 40 congressmen and women had 6,000 logins from Pakistan. Debbie Wasserman Schultz goes out and hires these IT guys, some of them who are working at a fast food place, have absolutely no IT credentials. They do have connections to Pakistan. And she pays them more than real IT people. She pays them more than the chief of staff of most of the congressional offices. And then hides all this information. It's just absolutely amazing. What is it with the DNC and these foreign Muslim groups? That's a rhetorical question, folks. You know what it is. You know what it is. And you know why they're bringing these people in, so they can get elected. But it's Keith Ellison is now defending all this. So there's at least 10 Minnesota daycare centers. This is reported by a Fox affiliate there in the area. And the question is, where's Gina Haspel and the CIA? Aren't they interested in how some of these terrorist groups are getting funded? Where's the Department of Justice prosecuting some of this stuff? Oh, that's right. They're too busy trying to overthrow the election and put President Trump out of office. That's what the CIA, Gina Haspel's friends, John Brennan and so forth, that's what they're up to, the NSA. They're not interested in this kind of stuff. And they're not interested in welfare fraud. They're not interested in the criminal stuff that's happening here. And, of course, interestingly enough, this is all going out of one airport, the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. And those people at that airport aren't interested in people with suitcases full of cash either. Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting how selective they are with all of this stuff? It's called a hawala. Hawala. so you just give it a Muslim name and you're okay. No problem getting that stuff out of there. So then we move from, and of course, that is a very, very large community of Somalis there in Minneapolis. And they've elected Keith Ellison. They call it Little Mogadishu. And the crime rate there has gotten pretty high. Not as bad as it is in Sweden, though. They also have a Little Mogadishu, a large concentration of Somali refugees. And in Sweden's Little Mogadishu, it is so bad that the police had to build a fortress for their police station. I forget how many tens of millions of dollars they spent in Sweden for that. And the police can't drive in on their own. They have to park in a remote area, and then they're driven in an armored vehicle. Their cars are not safe. They're not safe. So they drive in an armored vehicle with escort and everything, all as a group, and then go into their fortress because of the Little Mogadishu. Mogadishu, by the way, where Black Hawk Down happened, if you remember that movie, that situation. All right, so then let's go to Michigan, because they also have a very large concentration of Muslims in that area. And so many that there is a Democrat who is running for governor there. His name is Abdul Rahman Mohammed El Said. And he is the Democrat candidate for governor in Michigan. And he is very proud of the fact that they have a very large, I'm running to represent the people in this state, the Muslims. We have the highest per capita number of Muslim Americans in the country in Michigan. So he thinks he can become governor. So Keith Ellison just became a congressman. This guy thinks he's got enough Muslims in Michigan to become governor. So what happened at a debate with a back and forth between the Republican candidate? His name is Patrick Colbeck. He was trying to explain the Muslim Brotherhood, that it's a terrorist organization. And he was talking about it because he said El Said, his Democrat candidate opponent, has ties through a former affiliation with Muslim students' organizations. He said just because it is called the Muslim Brotherhood, that doesn't mean that this is strictly a religious issue. Yes, that's right, because Islam is not simply a religion. It is also a political movement. And it is also not a race. But, of course, the Democrat candidate plays the race card. I'm going to play this clip for you when we come back, because there's a back and forth about this. And the Democrat candidate comes back and says, well, you may not hate Muslims, but Muslims definitely hate you. That is the Democrat candidate, the Islamic candidate, who is a Democrat candidate in Michigan for governor. It's amazing. You may not hate Muslims, but Muslims hate you, says the Michigan Democrat gubernatorial candidate, El Said. Yeah, we knew that. We knew that. Thanks for telling us, though. It's nice that you actually came out and said that. And you can hear him say that when we come back. Stay tuned. So Michigan Democratic gubernatorial candidate Abdulrahman Mohammed El Sayed, in a debate with his Republican opponent, said, "You may not hate Muslims, but Muslims hate you." So how did this start? Well, it began with the Republican candidate having said in the past that he believed that this candidate had ties with the Muslim Brotherhood. And so instead of denying that, the Muslim just comes out and says, "You're racist. You're racist." The Republican candidate said, "By the way, just because the Muslim Brotherhood has the word Muslim in it doesn't mean that it is specific to Muslims. It's a political organization that is actually identified by Muslim-majority countries like Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates as a terrorist organization. And oh, by the way, the Muslim Brotherhood, one of the co-founders was Huma Abedin's mother." The ties to these jihadists, these Islamic terrorists, and the Democrat Party is just amazing. We're just talking about what's happening in Minneapolis, in Keith Ellison's district, who is now the deputy chair of the DNC. And, of course, we all know what happened with the Iwan brothers and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the former chair of the DNC under Hillary Clinton. But this isn't going to be investigated, most likely. We'll see what happens. But I want to play for you this back and forth from the Michigan gubernatorial debate between the Republican candidate, Patrick Kolbeck, and the Michigan Democratic candidate, Abdulrahman Mohammed El Sayed. Here's that clip.
"Identified the goals of the Muslim Brotherhood. And by the way, just because it has the word Muslim in it doesn't mean it's specific to Muslims. It's a political organization. It's actually identified by Muslim-majority countries like Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and UAE as a terrorist organization. And you can't say it's racist to go off and call them out and say its affiliation with that is something of concern. So for me, it actually is a concern. And we walk through examples of what their plan is and their term, my term, for civilization jihad in society. And they would talk about a different threat. They would talk about an education threat. They would talk about a political threat. They would talk about media threat across the board. And Dawood Waleed, I know very well what the media threat is that he can leverage here in Michigan. So I have very, very deep concerns around that. Obviously, in regards to Dr. Abdul El Sayed, he's got tangible affiliation with Muslim Students Association, which has been identified as an affiliated organization in that explanatory memorandum.
And what I have not heard is the Republicans on this panel decisively and swiftly call out this kind of Islamophobia, this kind of racism in the context, right, that they are running to represent a state that has the highest per capita number of Muslim Americans in the country. Now, you might not hate race Muslim, but I'll tell you, Muslims definitely hate you.
There you go. There you go. So he's very proud of the fact that Michigan has the highest per capita rate of Muslims. He says, your Islamophobia, talking about the terrorist group, the Muslim Brotherhood, and this candidate's alleged ties to it. He says, that is racism. You know, you are racist. You know, Islam is not a race. It is a religion and a political movement. And that political movement is allied with the Democrats, and they have a very large group of people there. They're going to use that as a voting block. See, playing the race card is really what these neo-Marxists do. Marx had class struggle. It was economically based. The neo-Marxists here in America are using not an economic class struggle. They're trying to create race classes. And that's what they're focused on. That's what Bill Ayers and the Weather Underground did. They were the ones who started all the talk about white privilege. They called it white skin privilege at the time. Bill Ayers stopped bombing buildings, and he started getting involved in education, bombing your kids' minds. And how does this look now in the universities? You know, you want to talk about race classes. Yeah, it's quite literally race classes. That is the major focus of the education at these expensive colleges. It's just absolutely amazing. College Fix is always on top of this, and they've got an update of Evergreen State College. They made headlines last year after hosting an event that asked white people not to come to campus for a day of absence. We want a day without any white people. Let's ban white people. Pretty clear where they're going with this, isn't it? This is in Olympia, Washington. It is a public school. This is subsidized by your taxpayer money there in Washington, probably federal taxpaying money as well. They organized a three-day day of absence observance that includes a mix of events on and off campus. Some of the gatherings are advertised as open to all skin colors, and others ask that only POCs, people of color, attend. It's very important that you get that order right, too, because politically correct people will take you down. If you say colored people, oh, that's verboten. But if you say people of color, that is the preferred term right now. I had a poster, and you can see this poster right there on the screen. College Fix got that poster. It declares the No Whites Allowed self-segregation events will be held off campus, trying to disassociate themselves from the official Evergreen State College event from last year. It asked people to RSVP at a website that spells out No Nazis Allowed in its URL. See, it's not okay to be white. And the reason is because if you are white, you are obviously a Nazi. That's what they're telling everybody at this event. And then let's take a look at Westfield State University. This is in Massachusetts on the other liberal coast that we have. They had a hate crime epidemic, but it disappeared overnight after they put up security cameras. They had 400 security cameras installed. The College Fix also reported about that. They said they had a weekly rate of people reporting bias and hate crimes dropped by a whopping 93%. During an 11-week period during the fall 2017 semester, there were 23 incidents reported. Since the cameras were installed, there's only been three complaints. The vast majority of the incidents last fall were racist notes slipped under other students' doors or left in mailboxes, as well as racist vandalism and racial slurs overheard, they said, by others. Some anti-Semitic graffiti has also been reported. And maybe what we're seeing here is the Tawana Brawley effect. As DC Clothesline points out, no doubt the violent, unhinged, virulent racists on campus moderated their behavior due to the cameras and diversity training, and these hate incidents were not hoaxes for attention. You know, it's kind of interesting today. There's a story that's been picked up by a lot of the major mainstream media because it comes from Reuters. They look to them for their news. The headline is that ex-Trump aide Bannon, Steve Bannon, promoted a culture war. And this is coming from the Cambridge Analytica whistleblower, Christopher Wiley. He said Bannon saw culture warfare as a means to create enduring change in American politics. And what this reminds me of is all the people who are wringing their hands about Trump creating a trade war with China when he tries to equalize 10-to-1 tariffs on steel, for example. See, the trade war with China has been going on for decades. They just never complained about it until we tried to stop it. And the same thing is true of the culture war. It has been going on for decades. And if you try to stop it or push back against it, that's when they complain, even if this whistleblower, what he is saying is true. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Waging war on corruption. It's David Knight.
You know, as the UK, and I guess maybe some people outside of the UK, get so excited about the royal wedding that is coming up, there is another wedding situation that is coming up before the Supreme Court. Actually, it's already come up. It's already been heard in arguments. And we're now awaiting the decision of our masters in black robes as to what we will be allowed to do and what we will not be allowed to do. I mean, that's the most pathetic thing about this, is how much power the Supreme Court has usurped over our lives. Or maybe we should just say how much we have abdicated to them, because we've had the various branches of government abdicate power to them to decide everything about our lives. And we have done that ourselves, the American people. We need to say we're not going to stand for this stuff. I mean, we need some civil disobedience in regard to this power grab by the Supreme Court. But Jonathan Turley is talking about the Supreme Court decision coming up about whether or not you can force a baker to bake a cake for your wedding if you want him, if you want to force him to make a custom cake celebrating your homosexual marriage that is against his beliefs as a Christian baker. Now, Jonathan Turley's take on this is that, yes, it is a First Amendment issue. He says it's not about religious freedom, however. He sees it as an issue about freedom of speech. Jonathan Turley says as the Supreme Court readies its historic decision on whether a Colorado cake shop owner, Jack Phillips, can refuse to make a special cake for a same-sex marriage due to religious objections, New York may have given the justices multiple examples of why it must answer this and other controversies not on religious grounds, but on free speech grounds. And he points out the fact that we just had a Manhattan judge rule recently that a Trump supporter who was wearing a MAGA hat, Make America Great Again hat, could be constitutionally thrown out of a bar because of his political views. And so Jonathan Turley is saying, if you can throw a guy who's wearing a Donald Trump cap out of a bar, you're not obliged to serve everybody, right? According to the Manhattan judge. Another example out of New York was when Milo got thrown out of a bar after the crowd there, led by somebody who was a editor at The Nation, a co-chair of the Bronx Democrat Socialists of America, basically gave him the Bronx cheer. said, Nazi scum, get out. The bar didn't kick him out, but according to Justice Cohen's ruling, it could have. The same guy who said, yeah, you can throw this guy out because he's got a Trump hat on. So the bar could have thrown him out, according to that ruling. And then also in New York, at the State University of New York at Oswego, they reprimanded a student for making other students feel uncomfortable by raising liberal intolerance of free speech. So what she says is, I don't think that liberals are tolerant of free speech. And the official there, the program coordinator, contacted her by email and said, you made people feel uncomfortable about that. And so we're not going to let you say things like that in the future. We're going to have some, moving forward, there will be written guidelines for our performers. Now, I hate to have to do this, but you hurt some people's feelings by saying that the left is intolerant of free speech. she doesn't see the hypocrisy inherent in that decision. And so Jonathan Turley says both sides are mistaken. It's not a distinction drawn along religious freedom lines. It's all about free speech. Even though the baker said he would sell any available cake to any customer, and he only objected to being forced to prepare a special cake. And Jonathan Turley points out that decision would also apply to a Jewish bakery asked to make a Mein Kampf cake for Hitler, or to an African-American baker who was asked to celebrate a skinhead wedding. Okay, so you understand the situation here. Even though Gary Johnson, the candidate of the Libertarian Party, couldn't understand the distinction, Jonathan Turley does. Good for him. I was absolutely amazed that Gary Johnson could not understand what the issue was here. Gary Johnson even went along the lines of saying, well, you know, you can't have somebody refuse to sell electricity to somebody because you don't like them. That was not it at all. I mean, he said he would sell any cake there. He wasn't going to customize it for them. And even to say, to draw in electric companies who have a government-granted monopoly, that's even a different class of business rather than a retailer. And Gary Johnson completely off the rails with that decision, as the rest of the Libertarian Party that supported him was. He finishes up, Jonathan Turley says, free speech will correct bad speech. That's the way you fight it. See, the way you fight problems is to add more liberty. Add more liberty. Don't take it away. He says, free speech will correct bad speech, particularly with the speed of social media and the internet. What you cannot do, what you must not do, is protect the right to throw out Trump supporters, but not protect the right to throw out Democrat socialists. That's the real issue. And you know, when we look at the issues of free speech, or is it free speech? Is it the free exercise of religion? There's a reason that the founders who wrote the First Amendment put them together. You can't have one without the other. You can't have free speech without the free exercise of religion, and vice versa. It's there together. You know who doesn't understand this? And I pointed this out last week. Mitt Romney. As we had a pastor, Christian pastor, I think he's up in Dallas. His name is Robert Jeffress. He was invited by the Trump administration to say a prayer at the opening of the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem, because he was a adamant Trump supporter during the election. And so Mitt Romney saw this as an opportunity to attack Donald Trump. And what he wound up doing was attacking Christianity itself and showing that Mitt Romney is just as intolerant and as authoritarian as the leftist establishment. But that shouldn't surprise us, because Mitt Romney had worked with Ted Kennedy in Massachusetts to pass the beta test for Obamacare. RomneyCare was exactly what Obamacare became. And by the way, that's why the establishment picked Romney to be the GOP choice. They figured that Obama was going to get reelected, but just in case they had somebody in Romney that was going to still give us Obamacare. See, they don't take any chances. They always hedge their bets. When the agenda for the globalist elitist is to have the government start to take over healthcare in a major way, they're going to give you two candidates to choose from who will both do that. And that was Mitt Romney. But let's talk about Mitt Romney and the First Amendment again. What he said, he tweeted out, he said, Robert Jeffress says you can't be saved by being a Jew and that Mormonism is a heresy from the pit of hell. He said the same thing about Islam. Such a religious bigot should not be giving the prayer that opens U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem. Now, the pastor that he attacked, Robert Jeffress, came back and said, historic Christianity has taught for 2,000 years that salvation is through faith in Christ alone. The fact that I, along with tens of millions of evangelical Christians around the world, continue to espouse that belief is neither bigoted nor newsworthy. See, what was bigoted and newsworthy was what Mitt Romney did. What Mitt Romney put out was bigoted and newsworthy. And it was PC censorship. To call other people's religious beliefs hate speech, and to call for them to be censored and punished. We had a Christian filmmaker, Ray Comfort, as reported by WND, respond and said, God saves by grace, not by race. That's a good one to remember. God saves by grace, not by race. He said, I'm a Jew, and I trust alone in his grace. If Romney knew the scriptures, he would know that Jesus revealed in the Bible is not the brother of Lucifer, that God doesn't live on a distant planet with multiple wives, and that we're not all going to eventually become gods. These are just some of the beliefs of the Mormon Church that Romney represents. No, not doctrines are found anywhere in the Bible. But, you know, Romney can still believe that. No problem. We're not calling him to be purged out of the public sphere, because we don't agree with his beliefs, because we think that his beliefs are heretical. But he does the opposite. That's what I said. It's his bigotry that is newsworthy. And as he pointed out, Christianity is not bigotry. It's just the opposite. Ray Comfort went on to say, the biblical gospel is good news for Jews, Mormons, atheists, Muslims, Hindus, agnostics, whosoever will may come. And so we don't exclude Mitt Romney. We just say, because of his bigotry, I don't think I want to see him in public office. We got enough people like him already in the Democrat Party. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. All right, we just talked about the attacks on the First Amendment. Now we're going to talk about the attacks on the Second Amendment. I guess we could just go down the Bill of Rights, because on a daily basis, every one of the Bill of Rights is under attack in this country. And if we don't fight back, they're going to destroy them completely. They pretty much eviscerated them already as we are. But before we do, before we talk about what happened with the Second Amendment yesterday, some good news and also some bad news. Let's talk about the products that we have for sale at InfoWarsStore.com, because that's what funds this program. And we've got several of our most popular products on deep discounts. Matter of fact, one of our very popular products, very expensive product, DNA Force Plus, is 50% off. It has a key ingredient, BioPQQ. There's 170 clinical studies on that. You can do your own research that shows how effective that is in protecting your DNA health and why it's important to protect your DNA health. I'm not going to go into that right now. I've talked about it in the past. But it makes it very expensive to produce that. So 50% savings is a very big dollar savings on DNA Force Plus. Now's a good time to stock up. Also, we have Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine at 25% off, and all of our Super Blue dental products, 50% off. This is our fluoride-free toothpaste. We got that in a couple of different flavors, and mouthwash, as well as Immune Gargle. Now, it may not have fluoride, but it has the good halogen iodine in it, and most importantly, I think it has nano silver. Nanosilver is very effective at fighting viruses as well as bacteria. Bacteria that can cause gum disease, it leads to tooth loss as well as to heart attacks. It's a great toothpaste and a great time to try that or to stock up on it. All the Super Blue fluoride-free products are now 50% off. And finally, we have Bodies, also 50% off. That's our intense turmeric formula that helps to support your flexibility, your mobility, your joints, and your immune system. Bodies is 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. Take a look at the other specials that we have there. We really do appreciate your support. That's what keeps us on the air and keeps us independent. All right, let's take a look at what happened with the Second Amendment yesterday. We had a very different outcome at a high school than we did at Parkland because of a very different officer. This happened at a school resource police officer. This was in a school called Dixon High School. He's now being lauded as a hero for intervening when a former student, just like we saw at Parkland, former student opened fire yesterday morning near the school gym where the students were gathered for a graduation rehearsal. The officer, identified by the city as a 15-year department veteran, Mark Dallas, shot the injured gunman after the suspect fired at the officer while trying to flee. The 19-year-old is a former student. No one else was injured in the gunfire exchange. The incident began about 8 a.m. in the morning. The suspect fired several shots near the gym. And in this particular case, the school resource officer, instead of running the other way or hiding, ran to the sound of the gunshot. So that's what a hero does. He rushed to the area. He confronted the suspect. When he confronted the suspect fled. But as he was fleeing, he turned around, fired a couple of shots at the officer, did not hit him, but the officer fired shots at him and did hit him. He's wounded, and the Dixon mayor said, "From the angle I'm looking at right now, a lot of things went right today when a great many of them could have gone wrong. He saved an enormous amount of lives." I want to play a clip for you as people are talking about the good guy with the gun stopping the armed ex-student who went there to shoot people up.
This morning, May 16, 2018, at approximately 8:06 a.m., the Dixon Police Department received a report of an armed male subject in the Dixon High School. The information was put out by our school resource officer that is assigned to that school. Dixon Police, along with the Lee County Sheriff's Department, Illinois State Police, Sterling Police Department, responded to the scene. The preliminary investigation currently showed the suspect had fired several shots near the West Gym. At that point, he was confronted by the school resource officer. When confronted, the suspect exited the school and began running westbound on Armory Drive. The school resource officer pursued the suspect. While pursuing the suspect shot several rounds towards the officer, at which time the officer returned fire and struck the suspect. Shortly thereafter, the suspect was taken into custody just west of Dixon High School. The suspect was transported and is receiving medical attention. It is believed the injury to the suspect is non-life-threatening. At this time, the name of the suspect and the name of the officer are not being released.
All right, let's hold it right there. I want to talk about the other officer in the Parkland shooting. There's been an update on his situation. Of course, his name was Scott Peterson. He was a guy who was called out by the Broward County Sheriff's Office. It looked like he was going to be investigated with an internal investigation. The sheriff called him out because he did not do what he was supposed to do. He did not confront the individual. Instead, he hid, essentially. He never entered the building. He never confronted the alleged shooter. He took up a position outside the building to stay safe. Now, this is a guy who was a long-term veteran of the department as well, and he resigned rather than face possible termination and took a pension, and he is now drawing that pension, and you won't believe how much he's making. $8,700 a month, and he's been getting this since April. He was paid as a police officer $102,000. He will make $104,000 on retirement. He's going to be paid more on retirement than he did as a school resource officer where he didn't do anything. Yeah, that's nice work, isn't it? Nice work if you can get it. He has now been named in a wrongful death lawsuit by Andrew Pollock, father of shooting victim Meadow Pollock. He tweeted the former cop, quote, "Let those children and teachers die." The thing is, you can look at this and say, well, maybe that pension is going to go to individual if he prevails in that lawsuit. I don't know. I don't think so. I think when you sue an individual, I think their pensions are exempt from lawsuits, though there may not even be any justice in that. And I find it amazing. You know, when we look at these extravagant pensions like this, public pensions. I was just talking yesterday, and I've got some more updates on this as well. The pensions in Illinois, by the way. And Illinois was where that other, where the good guy with the gun stopped the students in Dixon. But Illinois is going bankrupt, largely because of public pensions. And it was yesterday the Federal Reserve said, hey, I got an idea. Why don't we put a tremendous tax, additional tax, over the property taxes that we've already got on homeowners? Yeah, not going to cut back the public pensions in any way. So, yeah, public pensions are bankrupting Illinois and other places. And this guy is still going to be able to draw that public pension that he's going to make more than he did when he was working. More than he did when he's working. And as we look at this, remember, too, as people point out, the student, Nicholas Cruz, because of the Obama administration's Promise program, he had 58 different infractions in just a couple of years. They were never reported criminally because they don't want a school-to-prison pipeline. Instead, they have a school-to-mass murder pipeline is what they really set up there. In Kent State, and I pointed this out, I think it was May the 4th, we had the 48th anniversary of the Kent State shooting there, where no individual and no group was ever punished in that shooting, by the way. We have a Kent State graduate, Caitlin Bennett, 22 years old. She got a big buzz on social media because she took pictures of herself on campus after she graduated, and they couldn't do anything to her. She walked around with an AR-15 slung over her back, and on the top of her graduation cap on the board part, she wrote, "Come and take it." She said, "Now that I've graduated from Kent State, I can finally arm myself on campus," she tweeted out. "I should have been able to do so as a student, especially since four unarmed students were shot and killed by the government on this campus 48 years ago. She earned a degree in biology. She's a gun rights activist. She's the founder of the Kent State chapter of the libertarian group Liberty Hangout. The university bars students, staff, and third parties doing business with Kent State from possessing deadly weapons," evidently not the National Guard. "But visitors are not prohibited from carrying firearms on public university's grounds, even though they can't take them into buildings." She said, "I'm glad my photos are making headlines because my intent was to start a discussion about gun rights on college campuses. At Kent State in particular, guests may protect themselves with firearms, but students can't." She said, "I find that insulting." And then on Bill Maher, we had Killer Mike, a rapper, come in, and the two of them were talking about gun control. They said, you know, gun control it's hypocritical if you say that Trump is Hitler, but you want to give him all the guns. And we've made that point as well. Killer Mike said, one of the problems gun people have with liberals talking about guns is that gun people have problems with liberals talking about guns. They say liberals don't know what they're talking about when they're talking about guns. And Killer Mike said, at all. And then the two of them talked about how the left doesn't mention what happens during and after government attempts to remove guns from society. This is on Bill Maher. It's absolutely amazing. And then Mike said, so you're saying to a population of people that Trump is a tyrant, you're living under tyrannical times, and you're comparing him to Adolf Hitler. When you say that to my community, I got to take it seriously. And in an interview with Reason Magazine a few years back, he said, I do worry about my gun being taken. I worry about these roadblocks popping up everywhere, DUIs. He said, we've promised that our police can't act like the military, but they are. We're turning them in, giving them military machines and having them use military tactics. We'll be right back.
Waging information warfare against pushers of fake news. It's David Knight.
Welcome back. I want to continue with what came out about some news about the Second Amendment yesterday. As I was saying, we had Bill Maher and Killer Mike both agreeing that the left doesn't know what they're talking about with guns, and talking about the fact that they're playing with fire when they start talking about gun confiscation, and they're openly talking about it. There is no gun control. There is gun confiscation. It eventually results in gun confiscation. And we need to understand that incremental infringement on gun rights that is often supported and allowed by presidential candidates who are Republican, or presidents, I should say, not just presidential candidates. As candidates, oh, no, they're absolutists about the Second Amendment. But when they become presidents, they can get a little bit relative about where your freedom lies. Take the guns, we'll do the due process later. Or let's ban bump stocks. We've got some reports about that as well. But let's talk about the, the military side of this. As Killer Mike had said when we talked to Reason Magazine, he said, we're promised that our police can't act like the military does. But we've not only allowed, we've allowed not only military machines, but military tactics by our police. And then he talked about the war on drugs, especially. That's where they have really promoted this. And of course, this is an article coming from the Free Thought Project, where they put a tweet from last November by Radley Balco. This is a guy who has written a book, focused on this quite a bit, about the militarization of the police. And he said, this is what the red people say, and this is what the blue people say. Because, well, you know, we got two different teams here. The people put themselves in this category, and this is how they get you to give up your basic fundamental liberties and human rights, is by having you identify more with being part of a team so that you don't care about things that are fundamentally important. And so Radley Balco says, though, the red people say we need guns to protect us from the government. Also, it's unpatriotic to second guess when armed government employees kill people. And then the blue people say the government has a history of racism and oppression. Guns are instruments of death. So, therefore, only government employees should have guns. Yes, that is the silly syllogisms of bipartisan opposition, where you just start, you break people into teams where they oppose each other without any thought. Ethan Hawke had an interview where he talks about how difficult it is to sell a movie without a gun. Here's Ethan Hawke.
There's also a direct equation. People have been talking so much about gun control in this country, and I noticed recently, like, if you put in a column every movie I ever did where I carry a gun and every movie where I don't, and my salary, like if I asked my father to do the math, I really think it would be about 92% to 8%.
Really?
And when I realized that, you realize how much our identity is and wrapped up about what we want and how we see people and how hard it is to sell a movie without a gun. I mean, no wonder we're in turmoil over this subject.
And I'm sure if you look, and there always, if there's a gun in the movie, I'm sure it's on the poster.
I know, that's for sure. But devil's advocate, I do think that if you tried to take the swords out of Shakespeare,
same thing,
it would fall apart.
Yeah, there you go.
Pretty quickly, wouldn't.
They did a production back in the day.
A swordless production?
Yeah, okay. So he said it's only the movies. You can't make a movie if you don't have a gun, and they're the ones that make the most money. And when I look at this story coming from Costco in California, got a couple of different cities here. Costco stores in Citrus Heights and Roseville, California. You have a situation there where they have rejected a donation from a gun store that was going to go to the Children's Miracle Network. They said, we're not going to accept that from the Sacramento Black Rifle Association. They've done it in the past, and they would get a banner saying that they were helping out the Children's Miracle Network. Costco said, nope, not going to do it. I wonder if Costco sells movies with guns in them. Maybe they sell some of those movies that Ethan Hawke was talking about. This is the hypocrisy of the left folks. We have to demonize guns, even though we see in the UK that they can use knives or cars or acid or clubs, anything. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
You found it. It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I was just talking about Ethan Hawke saying, you know, I go back and I look at how much money the movies that I was in that had guns in them made versus the ones that didn't have guns in them. It's like 92 to 8. In terms of profitability or the amount of money that has been made. And yet the left wants to purge Even a gun store, as Costco is doing in California, a couple of different cities, said, well, we're not going to accept any donations to a charity because this is coming from a gun store. This is how they're trying to isolate people. I want you to understand where this is coming from. Ultimately, it's coming from the UN. I'm going to tell you about that. But before we get to that, I just want to talk about how we see this being done by the right in many cases. Yes, by conservatives, by Republicans. Gun Owners Foundation and Gun Owners of America have filed petitions with the BATF to make points toward the continued legality of the bump stock, the lowly bump stock. Now, this is a piece of junk, really. It's a gimmick for firearms. It doesn't, it actually makes shooting less accurate. If that was, in fact, used in the Vegas shooting, as many people point out, if whoever the shooter was had used a bump stock, and again, when we look at the fact that they had a bump stock as well as a bipod on there, it's like, well, you know, those two work against each other. It doesn't work with that. So, but let's just assume, for the sake of argument, that it was this guy called Stephen Paddock. And he checks into a hotel. Let's just go with the government's official conspiracy theory. Actually, no, it's, sorry, not a conspiracy. It is a lone shooter. But let's go with their official story. Let's just put it that way. And that this was involved. As many people pointed out, if that was in fact the case, he could have killed a lot more people by not using the bump stock. And if you're just going to use a spray and pray, then why did you have calculations on a piece of paper, which we're told were there? Why would you put down elevation calculations and so forth to try to make the shooting more accurate? None of this stuff makes any sense as we look through this. Nevertheless, we're now going to, because of that gimmick piece, we're now going to have some gimmick legislation put out there by politicians, many of whom are Republican. And I would include in that President Trump calling for the elimination of the bump stock. And so Gun Owners of America, in response to the BATF's notice of proposed rulemaking, so that's the way the laws get made anymore. We have legislation without representation. Our elected representatives are not voting on this. They would not want to have their name recorded one way or the other. Those cowards who have abdicated their responsibility to the bureaucracy. The bureaucracy makes rules. Then they put the rules out for a public commenting period. And they don't really care what you say or not. Your comments don't mean anything to them, because they're going to stay there in that position one way or the other. Whether you agree with what they're doing or not, they are a power unto themselves. And there are no term limits for these bureaucrats. As a matter of fact, that's what Washington got so upset about, was the fact that President Trump fired a couple of guys that were high up in the FBI. You can't fire government bureaucrats, no matter what they do. No matter how many crimes they commit, you can't fire them. They have permanent employment. And as President Reagan pointed out, these bureaucracies have eternal life. They never get killed. But anyway, so they put out a proposed rulemaking at the insistence of President Trump to get rid of bump stocks. And so the chairman of Gun Owners of America writes, the ATF has had an opportunity to evaluate bump stocks on numerous occasions throughout the Obama administration, by the way. And yet each time the agency has reviewed bump stocks, it has determined that under the law, they are unregulated parts, completely outside the scope of the agency's authority. This is why it is so dangerous to play with this political game. Because now what you're doing is you're establishing a principle that the BATF can regulate something that they have never regulated before. That is called infringement, folks. It is a gradual process, just like when somebody takes a fence and they move it onto your property, 6 inches or a foot, and you leave it there. That's not much. They're only taking, you know, they only just moved it on for 6 inches. And I can see where they have a reason where they want to put the fence onto my property 6 inches. And they leave it, you leave it there. You don't complain about that. That becomes their property over a period of time. Then they move it another 6 inches or a foot. And you don't complain about it. They take it that way. That's why in the founders put in the First Amendment, they said, Congress shall make no law abridging free speech or the exercise, free exercise of religion. They knew that that could be done by fiat. But they knew that guns were not going to be confiscated by fiat. That would be a gradual infringement process, because you try to just take all the guns away immediately, you're going to have some pushback. That's what the guns were for. The guns were kind of like mutual assured destruction that we have with nuclear weapons. It's there as a deterrent. And so they knew that that was going to happen with gradual infringement. So that's what we're doing right now by giving and begging the ATF to regulate something that even Obama did not beg them to regulate. It's called infringement, setting up a principle. And the they went on to say it will put into place a slippery slope for future anti-gun presidents. The GOF, the Gun Owners Foundation, additionally asserts that bump stocks cannot be used without considerable practice and skill, meaning that they are not inherently automatic weapons. The word automatic means a device working by itself with little or no direct human control. See, an automatic rifle, you just pull the trigger down and hold it, and it does all the firing itself. What this is making the gun bounce back and forth. And then this is a gun that's still semi-automatic. That means that you pull the trigger and it fires a shot, as opposed to a muzzle loader. We have to load the thing each time. Or the single-action revolvers that we used to historically have, where you would have to pull back the hammer and then you would release it with the trigger. Now, you know, with the for the last 100 years or more, we've had guns that you pull the trigger, and each time you do it, it cocks it and releases it each time with a trigger pull. That's a semi-automatic. It's nothing new. And if you look at what's happening with the bump stock, you can accomplish the same thing by tying it to your belt. It takes a little bit of practice, just like the bump stock does. But they point out that if this goes through, this means that every bump stock owner immediately becomes a felon, subject to a $250,000 fine. See, there is no... Think about that, $250,000 fine. Just like the FAA a couple of Christmases ago said, we have passed a new law saying that everything other than the tiny, teeny tiniest little drones, even toy drones, even little camera drones, will be big enough that you're going to have to register them with the FAA. If you don't register with the FAA, and it only costs you like $5 to register with the FAA, or $25 or something like that. But if you don't register it and we see you flying this thing around, we can give you a $25,000 fine. See, there is no protection in the Bill of Rights if it is a government rule. They maintain the fiction that only laws that are passed by Congress are subject to the restrictions in the Bill of Rights, which means that they have to accuse you of a crime. You have the chance to confront and to argue your innocence, to call witnesses in your defense, and you have protection against excessive fines. But if they make rules in the bureaucracy, you don't get any of that. So they can come out and say, if you got a little bump stock, this little gimmick, this toy that was around, you immediately become a felon and they can give you a $250,000 fine because you have no protection now against excessive fines. And you can get 10 years in prison. Yeah, it's not just excessive fines, it's excessive punishment that you have no protection of. So where is all this coming from? It's coming from the UN. The UN has this is the UN's International Action Network on Small Arms, and they want to get rid of the illicit trade in firearms, which means that if they're going to control firearms that are going across the border, they have to control firearms within our border to make sure that they don't cross the border, and that if they do cross the border, they can trace it back to you. That is what all of the Fast and Furious, the gun walking stuff that went back to the Bush administration, that was what that was all about. That was to create a movement to have more tracking and to take down our firearms in this country. And when you look at their list of what they want to do, the first thing they have on their list is exert greater control over ammunition. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Week of Action Against Gun Violence, coming from the UN's International Action Network for Small Arms. As I pointed out, the UN Arms Trade Treaty, which they tried to push through in 2012, the whole thing blew up in their face, all this Fast and Furious after the federal agent was killed, and they discovered Fast and Furious and also the gun walking programs that have been going on for quite some time with George Bush, intentionally playing fast and loose with weapons sending them across the border so they could make a case. It was really a false flag operation. Even the New York Times pointed that out. It was a false flag operation for gun control. It blew up in their face, and yet they had scheduled action. It was in July of 2012. I remember it well because it was before I started working here at InfoWars, and I was at the UN covering the event for another organization, a gun rights organization. And the week before they were to have the vote, they had the shooting in Aurora, Colorado, to kind of revive the interest in gun control because they'd really lost the narrative. And all of this fast and furious gun walking stuff was really about the UN's agenda to try to stop guns from crossing by. I mean, who wouldn't want to stop firearms, illegal firearms, from crossing the border, right? The devil is always in the detail. And if you look at what they were proposing, they were saying, well, we have to mark all the ammunition as well as the guns. And we have to be able to trace everything back to all of these different gun stores and individual gun owners, which means that we have to register everything within the United States in order to do this. It was a massive push by the UN for gun registration within the United States. And so when you look at this global week of action against guns from the United Nations, they're pointing out that the purpose of it is for us to advocate collectively for an end to illicit trade and misuse of small arms and light weapons. That's the purpose there. And we know, as Mac Slavo points out, we all really know what that means. The UN presumes they have the authority over every human being on Earth, and as such, they seek to ban guns from the slaves that they want to control. And it's kind of interesting, you know, when we talk about that's exactly what it is. They see us as slaves. They want to control us. And yet, there's been so much rhetoric from people who are black leftists talking about the fact, look, the slave owners in the South had guns, and they wouldn't let the slaves have guns. That means that guns are bad. It's like, no, it means if you don't have guns, you're a slave, and you don't have any way to fight back against that. Do you want to be a slave? Do you want to surrender your guns? See, that's what Killer Mike and other people understand that these black liberals don't understand. It's like, don't you understand the logical conclusion of what you're talking about here? That people were enslaved because they didn't have guns, and now you want to say you want to turn over your guns? I mean, that's even dumber than saying, we don't like the president, we think he's Hitler, so let's give him all the guns. I mean, they even saw that it was used to enslave people. And worse than that, in communist regimes, democide, over 100 million people killed by governments because, as Chairman Mao said, power comes out of the barrel of a gun. You don't even have to use the gun. And see, that's one of the things that people who look at this say, well, I don't know. I just don't think that a Second Amendment is an effective way to push back against government tyranny. It's like, oh, yes, it is. Because you don't have to use that gun. It is a deterrent. Just as Kim Jong-un is looking at all this talk coming from Jim Bolton, who's saying, read my mustache, no new nukes. You know, they understand where he's going when he starts talking about Libya. You take away people's, they see it as, to them, a hedge against the government taking out this dictator. If he really wanted to get those nukes, he should have shut his mustache instead of continuing on with that. But anyway, we'll get to that maybe later. One of the things they have here is goal number 11 is to make cities and human settlements inclusive, safe, resilient, and sustainable. See all that? Cities, sustainable, all that together. See, this is really where all this stuff is tied together. You take away people's ability to shoot. You take away their ability to communicate. You take away their ability to move. Move, communicate, shoot. You take that away, you have total control of a population. The military understands that. They talk about that all the time. And that's where the attacks on the Second Amendment, the attacks on the First Amendment, and our free speech on social media come in. And that's where the smart cities and the sustainable movement that are coming to take away your ability to move about freely. They don't want you to own anything. They want you to be their slave. And as they point out, as Max Slavo points out in this article, translation of that. Let's ban all gun ownership by private citizens. Let's concentrate guns in the hands of obedient government enforcers who rule over an unarmed, enslaved class of impoverished workers. Yes, who are confined to the cities. Well, they have no ability to move, communicate, or shoot. But let's take a look at some of the other things that they have out of this UN program, action to prevent, combat, and eradicate the trade in small arms and light weapons. Like I said, as we're going to break, the first thing is to exert greater control over ammunition, the component that makes guns lethal. Yeah, that's right, because without that, you've just got clubs. So they understand, and that's why you've seen so many moves made against ammunition by Obama and others. Make concrete commitments to increasing women's participation in small arms control. They know that they're their most reliable allies. Provide greater support for survivors of gun violence. Ah, that's where the David Hoggs and the Emma Gonzalez's come in, especially because they are children. They're children. So you can't say anything about it. Even though they have recovered enough to become advocates and to argue in the public arena and to promote policies, you can't talk about them. That's bullying. And so you got to support those survivors. Raise awareness of the Sustainable Development Goals. See, that's what we're talking about. Again, tying it back into sustainable development. The UN 2030 Agenda for Sustainability. That's where the smart cities, the 5G, they're taking away your ability to move out of those cities by taking away your private transportation. Engaging media outlets to ensure gun control and disarmament remain a priority in your country and that nobody has the ability to speak out with an opposing view. That's why these people, the social media people, are so important. And then launching social media campaigns on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to push government to take meaningful, effective actions to prevent gun violence. And of course, at the same time, using those same instruments to shut down anybody who is pushing the opposite point of view. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about the Democrats. I think they really have become the porn party because they have pinned all of their hopes on Stormy Daniels and her porn lawyer. And I think that CNN has become the porn network. They've really gotten hooked on this porn lawyer. He's had 147 appearances in just 10 weeks on the press. And the question some people are asking, is he even working as a lawyer on Stormy Daniels' behalf? I mean, who is he working for? Who is paying his bills, for example? But is he effective as a lawyer if he's just a talking head on one CNN program after the other? But you know what? CNN and the Democrats are starting to have concern about this. They think they're being taken down the same road that they followed Michael Wolff on. You know, they get behind these loud Pied Pipers who are attacking President Trump. And sometimes it doesn't work out the way they expected. And they're starting to get worried about pushback on Avenatti. And I think they're worried because he is pushing very hard against free press. Even CNN is having problems with that. So when we come back, we're going to talk about the astounding statements that Stormy's lawyer, Avenatti, has made to try to throttle anybody that says anything critical about him. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Keep on lying. Live from Austin, Texas, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and as we look at Stormy Daniels' lawyer, Avenatti, this case now has taken a turn, and it's not just an attack on President Trump, but it's an attack on the free press. That is what the lawyer is doing. So in that context, I want to take a look at what's going on here. You know, yesterday I played a little clip for you where he identified himself and Stormy Daniels as the Justice League. Here's that clip. Let's play clip three.
A lot of people who are detractors of this president have pinned a lot of their hopes on Bob Mueller for getting to the bottom of this. It seems like some of that has now attached to you, but I wonder if you
Democrats
see yourself
see them
as part of the resistance or part of the effort to reveal the president and the people around him, or if all of this is somehow related to the cases you have in which you're representing Stormy Daniels.
Well, I don't think we're a member of the resistance, Nicole. I think we're a member of, I think Professor Butler put it best on Saturday, the Justice League. Aimed at truth and disclosure. And wherever the chips fall, that's where they fall, whether it results in the president staying in office or not. I mean, that's going to be up to people that are far more intelligent.
All right, so let's just hold it right there. Yeah, they're the Justice League. They're the Justice League. And, you know, Stormy doesn't even wear a mask. She don't wear anything, as a matter of fact. And the question is now, as this guy is attacking press outlets with threatening letters, does he even have any legal briefs himself? You know, she has gone, as we look at this, as we look at the Justice League and these two superheroes that are out there to avenge the Democrat Party against the election of President Trump, I think what we're seeing here is that Stormy Daniels' secret power is her invulnerability to shame. Chris, now she's got a new story here. She's going to be performing with a naked Trump statue. That's going to be the next thing she's going to. She's going to dance with nude statues of President Trump. Yes, she has. She's completely impervious to shame. She has, as the King James Bible puts it, I think, the forehead of a harlot. As she moves on with this. But yeah, that's your Justice League. You know, they do get their money, they say, from Crowd Justice. There's been other investigations into how they're funded that appear that there may be some other sources of this other than the crowdfunding that they get from the site Crowd Justice. And the question is, as I said before, is he really doing anything to represent her, or is he simply an attack dog for the resistance, as the CNN reporter was asking him, you know, because he's had 147 appearances on media in just 10 weeks. How does he have any time to work on this case? And when we look at investigations into his background, because as he was leaking out, as Zero Hedge points out, he's attacking these people. As he was leaking out information about Michael Cohen, along with a couple of financial reports that were about different Michael Cohens, even got that wrong. And as I saw that, I said to my wife, how does a lawyer get away with doing this? I mean, where did he get this information? And a lot of people are asking, where did he get this information? And if he got this information as part of a trial, as part of discovery, is he allowed ethically? I don't know. I get Lionel coming up in the next hour. Maybe we'll ask him if that's something that a lawyer can legally do, if he gets stuff in discovery, if he can put it out there to the press. Maybe he can. I don't know. But the question is, who gave him that information? That's another big part of the question, along with who is paying him. So as all that stuff happened, you had the Daily Caller and some other outlets start to investigate his background. Oh, but you can't investigate his background. You know, he's like these guys that sued InfoWars through Georgetown. It's like, you got Lee Stranahan talking about how they're involved with the government and which groups they are and what their political perspective is as they became the voice of the narrative that the mainstream media was using for what happened in Charlotte. They would only go to these guys. And so we'd say, well, are these guys independent spokespersons, or do they have a very strong political bias? Are they associated with political organizations? If you go to their bio and you look at what groups they publicly talk about belonging to, and if you actually mention that on air or in print, then they sue you. And that's what he is threatening to do to Daily Caller now. This is the tactic of the left, folks. It is a tactic of the left. He went on CNN Monday night, and he talked about this. And let's play clip number 4, where they are going back and forth about whether or not this is something that is legitimate. Here's on CNN, they're pressing him about threatening the Daily Caller in an email.
Did you call it character assassination or whatever, trying to get you? Were you talking about the Daily Caller?
Don Lemon.
You put them in that because you know that they released your email. Peter Hassan tweeted out your email that you sent to him, right? And he said, you said, we will expose your publication for what it truly is. We will also recover significant damages against each of you that participated personally. So if I were you, I would tell Mr. Trump to find someone else to fabricate things about me. If you think I'm kidding, you really don't know anything about me. This is the last warning. What's that about?
Don, I'll tell you exactly what it's about, okay? All attorneys are not ethical. All because you're an attorney doesn't mean you're ethical and you do what you're supposed to do.
We know this.
All journalists are not ethical just because they're a journalist. There's good journalists and there's bad journalists. There's ethical journalists and there's unethical journalists. And you know what, Don? If we encounter journalists that don't get their facts straight by design, don't follow
basic
standards of journalism.
But it didn't question them on any facts.
Purposely skew stories to fit their own political dialogue and what they want the message to be, we're going to continue to call them out on that. There's nothing wrong with that in any way, shape, or form. Just like when individuals encounter unethical attorneys, there's nothing wrong with them calling attorneys
out on it. I get that. And this, I'm challenging. Yeah. I challenge you in interviews, and other people do as well. I think that's perfect. I mean, that you should be able to do that. But also, people criticize, and I think you guys did, for Michael Cohen for threatening a reporter or threatening someone. Do you think that that behavior is similar, that you're threatening?
No, I think you're talking.
No, he's a conservative. I can threaten people on my
email.
Liberal.
for the following reason. My email is no different than a cease and desist or retraction type email or letter that is received by numerous media organizations on a consistent basis, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Why'd you put off the record?
Let me tell you. But the reason why I put off the record was because I was concerned that they were going to actually print it, and I don't think it has anything to do with the underlying case.
Well, if it's normal, then why wouldn't you worry? Why wouldn't you let them print?
That's fine. There's nothing unusual about that. But let me say this, and that is, there's nothing wrong with that email that I sent.
Folks, this is going to go the same way it did with Michael Wolff. Remember when eventually Morning Joe, Mika Brzezinski had just had enough of that guy? They came after him with all their claws. I mean, even Don Lemon is looking at this, and he's still trying to be deferential to Michael Avenatti. But he's like, you called out Michael Cohen for threatening people. Why is it different when you threaten people? Well, what I did was standard. And it's like, well, why did you tell them that this is off the record then, if it is a standard procedure to do this? You know, what he said was you don't know anything about me if you think I'm not going to do anything about this. He said, we will expose your publication. You know, maybe CNN believes that following this porn case so much that maybe they're getting a little bit overexposed themselves as they push at this. But it's also the fact that he's coming after them for any criticism, any generic criticism. He doesn't say to them, this is wrong. I want you to retract specifically what you had to say about this. It's just like, you better not talk about me. You don't know me. If you're going to come out here and criticize me, you don't know that I'm going to come after you with a lawsuit. Yeah, we understand. That's the way the Democrats run. And then he goes after other outlets. It's not just the Daily Caller, and it's not just one report. As Zero Hedge points out, he slams, as he calls them, an a-hole. I can't say it on news. An a-hole reporter. And he says that other lawyers are jealous of his success. As they point out in Zero Hedge, they said, after leaking the financial records of Trump's attorney, Michael Cohen, along with two unrelated Michael Cohens who are wrongly accused of possibly fraudulent payments, people began digging into his past, only to discover a train wreck of shady business dealings, unpaid taxes, a state bar complaint, and dozens of lawsuits in the wake of a failed venture in the coffee industry. Avenatti's threats received an immediate pushback, and even not just Don Lemon, but CNN's Ryan Lizza commented, it seems fair and well-reported to me. If there's something specific, that's the key. If there's something specific that is false, Avenatti should point that out rather than threatening the reporters. 48 hours later, he was at it again. He went after the Hollywood Reporter, calling that reporter an a-hole before demanding to speak with her editor because there was an unflattering article. And then there's a third one that we'll get to when we come back. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. I think it is important for us to take a look at what is going on with the Stormy Daniels case, because the way the lawyer is conducting himself, Avenatti. After he started attacking the Daily Caller, we had Fox News and even CNN, his go-to network, multiple anchors interviewing him and also commenting on what he was doing in terms of trying to threaten people. As I said before we went to break, CNN's Ryan Lizza said, it seems to me that, you know, he's criticizing Daily Caller. He's threatening them. He didn't say anything specific that he had an objection to in what they had reported. And so CNN's Ryan Lizza says, it seems fair and well reported to me. If there was something specific that is false, that Avenatti should point out that rather than just threatening the reporters. But then he doubled down on it. Yesterday, he went after two more news outlets. And we'll tell you what was said about that. And then we'll play what a Democratic consultant said about this, because this is another never-Trumper, you know, one of these other critics, just like Michael Wolff, that is leading them down the path of destruction as they try to come after President Trump. You know, they are so desperate to get Trump that they will march behind anybody like this. And now even CNN is starting to realize that this guy is attacking the press. Attacking the press, the freedom of the press, and that's a bit much even for CNN at this point. But it is a tactic that we have seen used over and over again against InfoWars. All these slap lawsuits, these strategic lawsuits that are put out there to intimidate and also to bring an organization down with legal fees. That's what this is all about. And he's using these same tactics, even though he hasn't sued anybody yet. He's out there hurling threats that there will be legal action, not telling them specifically what he objects to, because if there was something false about that, then they could retract it. If it wasn't false, they're not under any obligation to retract it. And you are allowed to look at the background of public figures. If you're not allowed, we don't have a First Amendment anymore. So before we go back into this, I just want to remind you of the products that keep us independent, the products that we sell at InfoWarsStore.com. And we have some specials at InfoWarsStore.com. We have Survival Shield X2, our nascent iodine, is 25% off. We have BOD-EASE, our turmeric formula. It has, with turmeric, it supports your flexibility, your mobility, your joints, your immune system. And we also have Super Blue, our fluoride-free dental products. We have two flavors of toothpaste, 50% off. We have the mouthwash, 50% off. And we have Immune Gargle, 50% off. That's a spray. You can actually spray it on your hands as well. Because all of these products, not only do they not have fluoride, they have the good halogen iodine, and they have nano silver, which is very good for the topical application, and it kills virus as well as bacteria. You know, they still use silver in the ointments that they treat burn patients with. It's even though it is an ancient remedy to disinfect things, it's still around because it works. It works very effectively. And so we have a different form of silver. We have a colloidal silver that you can take internally, but the Super Blue dental products use nano silver to kill viruses and bacteria on contact, because bacteria can cause gum disease that leads to tooth loss as well as to heart disease. So this is a good time for you to try our Super Blue products. I think if you try them, you're going to love the toothpaste as well as these other products. You can get it 50% off. If you've already tried it, it's a good time to stock up on it as well. Again, those are the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Okay, let's go back to the new attacks. Again, he went after the Daily Caller, Fox, even CNN called him out on that. And then yesterday, he went after the Hollywood Reporter and also another publication called Law and Crime. He threatened that publication with a lawsuit for running a piece that analyzed his appearance at a court hearing in April. So here is a legal publication called Law and Crime, and they comment on a court case that he was a lawyer at, and because they comment on the court case, he threatens them with a lawsuit. This happened Wednesday evening. It was a piece by Rachel Stockman. She alleges that after the publication of the article that he deemed to be unfair and complete, as he put it, we'll just say BS. He didn't say BS. He spelled it out. He threatened to sue our reporter, Colin Kalmbacher, personally, and then to sue our publication, and then whoever, quote, edited the article as well, unquote. Stockman said that Avenatti also threatened to badmouth the reporter responsible for the piece during his upcoming appearance on The View. Does that mean that he's promising that he's going to slander their publication? He has threatened to cut off certain networks and to print publications for coverage that were unfavorable to him personally. And again, yesterday, he went after Hollywood Reporter's Eric Gardner, accused Avenatti of calling him an a-hole and demanding to speak to his editor after the site ran an unflattering story on the lawyer's conduct. And the question is it fair to point out, as Daily Caller does again, that the California State Bar is investigating Michael Avenatti? Seattle attorney David Knoll filed a complaint against Avenatti on March the 26th, as the Daily Caller previously reported. On April 18th, Fox News obtained on Wednesday, it shows that Avenatti is now under investigation. The state bar only launches a full investigation if the attorney reviewing the complaint, quote, sees evidence of a serious violation, unquote, according to the website of the state bar. And so they said, the complaint against attorney Michael J. Avenatti has been reviewed and forwarded to the enforcement unit for further investigation and prosecution if warranted. But you better not say that, because he might come after you. The Daily Caller reported what the state bar said. Is that something that is actionable? I don't know. Now, here's what on Fox News. They had Democrat strategist Brad Gerstmann and others talking about what really does constitute the freedom of the press and what is something that is actionable, and whether or not this is a good idea for the Democrats to be putting all of their resistance hopes on Michael Avenatti. Here's that clip.
Richard, let me start with you, because as journalists, you know, people, when they get in panic situations or when they're angry about something, they like to threaten and say that they're going to sue us. But my impression was always that you have to be knowingly publishing a lie, and you know it's a lie, and you put it out there anyway. Is that the standard?
Journalism 101. Every journalist knows that, and they're careful of that fact. When you look at Sullivan versus New York Times, that's the case that laid it out. If you're a journalist, it has to be actual malice. You have to know that you're printing a lie.
Do we know whether these are true or false at this point? I mean, there are court documents, the Daily Caller says, that pass back them up.
Yeah, I guess if Michael Avenatti knows that these are untrue, then there would be an action here. And I don't disagree with the legal thresholds that Richard mentioned before. He's a public figure, so obviously the malice aspect has to be included in it. It's a different set of circumstances when it's a non-public figure. However, I think on a political point, I think that the Democrats, my party, have made a terrible mistake here.
Right.
You know, they're pushing him forward in the attack mode, and all that time that he's doing it, Trump has improved his position, has improved his popularity, and it has further strengthened the president's base.
Yeah.
So, you know, Michael Avenatti's being used as a pawn here, and really as a tool of the Democratic Party, and it's, you know, he doesn't realize it yet because he's being encouraged left and right, get out there. But in the meantime, he's wearing the explosive vest and he's blowing himself up in front of public.
It's basically this Democrat strategist is saying that Michael Avenatti is not a superhero with the Justice League. He's really more like a suicide bomber that's going on CNN and various media 147 times. This is the way that it worked with Michael Wolff. All the feeding frenzy about the fire and the fury. Yeah, it was sound and fury signifying nothing. And then all the information came out about all the lies and the fabrication of that guy. But again, whether or not any of this stuff is true, and whether or not this is something that works for the Democrats or works against the Democrats, the key issue here, I think, and the reason I'm focusing on this, is because this is about freedom of the press. And are we going to allow the left to continue these tactics? You know, what Michael Avenatti is doing as an avatar, that's what you call him, Michael Avatar. He is an avatar for the Democrat Party. The way these people have operated is to consistently threaten and to actually file slap lawsuits against InfoWars and other publications to intimidate people, to bring them down if they don't like what is being said. And you know, the same thing happened to Julian Assange, hasn't it? We'll talk about what's going on with Julian Assange, but it really is about these tactics to take people down. As they point out, it has to be malice. That's why there is a period where you can say, you got this factually wrong. And you give the people a chance to check that and to correct that. Because people can make mistakes. It has to be they have to knowingly and willingly tell lies about you. That didn't happen here.
In a world of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
You know, any discussion of the freedom of the press in today's environment cannot be had without talking about what has happened, the abomination of what has happened to Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. I've got an article, a couple of articles here, talking about how it looks like they're about to throw him out of the Ecuadorian embassy. You know, there was a change in the leadership of Ecuador in the last election. The U.S. intelligence community, whose crimes were exposed by WikiLeaks, spent tens of millions of dollars to make sure that there was going to be a change in the Ecuadorian election. And now there's been a change there for Julian Assange. As we saw in the last couple of days, information came out that they were recording everything and everyone who went in there and talked to him. And in just the last month or so, they have cut off all contact with the outside world. They have now, in terms of the internet, they've now cut off all physical connection to the outside world. He's not allowed any visitors to come in. And it looks as though he's about to be thrown out of the Ecuadorian embassy, reports the Automatic Earth blog via Zero Hedge. It said Julian Assange appears to be painfully close to being unceremoniously thrown out of the Ecuadorian embassy in London. If that happens, the consequences for journalism, for freedom of speech, and for freedom of the press will resound throughout the world for a very long time. This is very important, folks. This is not just one man or one organization. This is about a principle. Just as we see these other tactics of slap lawsuits, of threats from lawyers, to anybody who says anything in general that is unflattering to somebody, threaten them with lawsuits, or to then go through and do those lawsuits, this is, I would say, the next level of that threat. Because, you know, it wasn't that long ago that everybody on the left was clapping and applauding about Steven Spielberg's story about the Washington Post and the courage of printing the Pentagon Papers, that competition going back and forth with the New York Times and the Washington Post. First, Daniel Ellsberg went to the New York Times and they said, well, you know, we've got some general information. They put some of that information out there, but then the Nixon and his administration came back and intimidated them, and they would not actually put the information out there. Washington Post was very anxious to get this information. They were upset that they hadn't gotten that information. They wanted the readership and so forth. And so they pursued Ellsberg. They got the information and said, you give that to us, and we will actually start running it. We'll print the actual documents out there. That's what Julian Assange did on multiple issues. Julian Assange told us the truth about the crimes of Hillary Clinton. Julian Assange told us the truth about the crimes of the CIA, of the NSA, of other organizations, and not just our criminal government, but other criminal governments. He is owed a debt of gratitude. When the government deceives you about war, like we saw with the Pentagon Papers, or with other issues, it is the duty of the press, it is the duty of citizens to make that clear to people. And when we allow the government to punish these people, as it was not allowed with the Washington Post and the New York Times because they had political connections, what he is doing is no different than that movie that Spielberg did about the Post. But see, they were slanting that because they wanted to use that as a to bring along the millennials. And to tell them, hey, you know what? We can do the same thing against Richard Nixon eventually. You know, we can push back and get him out of office and so forth. I think that was why they supported that, because you don't see Spielberg or any of these people standing up and supporting Julian Assange, do you? And so this article that's on Zero Hedge from the Automatic Earth blog, the title of it is, I am Julian Assange. All of us in the press should be saying, I am Julian Assange. We will lose the freedom of the press and the freedom of speech separately if we don't hang together, folks. We will hang separately, as I said during the American Revolution. All right, stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Actually, I should say I'm Julian Assange, because if we don't support Julian Assange, I won't be here. We won't have a free press. We'll have a government mockingbird, government-controlled press. This article, it's on Zero Hedge from Automatic Earth blog, says that Julian Assange is not any different from any journalist who's working for a major publication, a major paper, a major news channel. He said the difference is that he published what they want because they want to stay in power. He said the Washington Post today would never do an investigation like Watergate or the Pentagon Papers. And that's why we have WikiLeaks. Because not only has the government become more secretive, more deceptive, everything is classified. Everything is classified. Just go back to the House Intelligence Committee report. Going back and forth, we got a summary here of our investigation over the last year. Shouldn't we know what our elected leaders did? They said, there's nothing in here that is dangerous to any individuals. It's not going to expose any people. It's not going to expose any methods. There's no reason why the conclusions of our committee should not be published. But they said, no, this is top secret. You can't tell anybody. Can't tell anybody. We know why they did that. They didn't want to be embarrassed about their crimes. And finally, we had President Trump say, I have the power to declassify that top secret government so the public can see it and they can see it without redactions. And when we saw there was absolutely no reason for it to be even classified as confidential. You know what? Everything that was in that report, we'd been saying here on InfoWars for well over a year. We'd already drawn all these conclusions. It's just that we wanted to see if the House came to the same conclusions. And they did. So it wasn't anything that was secret. We could all put those pieces together of the puzzle, but they try to conceal and hide everything from us. And that's where WikiLeaks comes in. As Michael Quinn points out, Julian Assange is perhaps the greatest freedom fighter of our time, leading the information war, leading the info war against corrupt governments and corporations. Yes, it's important to have the independence and the autonomy, as we do here at InfoWars, to speak about this stuff. But it is also important that when you have people who have these documents, that they put themselves on the line and get this stuff out there so that we can report it. Yeah, they'll come after us too. That's why they're coming after us as well. And they will come after us harder if they're successful at getting WikiLeaks down and Julian Assange. I mean, this is across the spectrum, folks. It even comes down to you. When you go on Facebook and Twitter and social media, and you try to share articles or videos of InfoWars, and they shut that down. Or YouTube, censoring conservatives and libertarians and InfoWars, as they shadow ban us, as they keep you from being able to share information. You know, we had Chuck Schumer a couple of years ago say, oh, we're going to license people. We're going to give extra protections to the official press. Well, who would that be? Oh, that would be the people that are going to make sure that they maintain their access to the Democrat and Republican politicians. So they're not going to say anything really bad about them. They want to maintain their access to the Pentagon and to the CIA and the NSA spokesman. So they're not going to say anything really bad about them either. And so they will license those people and they will protect them and they will come after everybody else. And now we have social media saying they're going to do the same thing. Oh, they will pay Fox News for their reports, but they will censor our reports. It's this full spectrum. Free speech has never been under attack to the extent that it is right now. I'm absolutely convinced. And so when we look at this, as they point out here, Julian Assange is not wanted because he's a spy. Remember Pompeo, when he was a congressman, said he was a hero. Then he joined the CIA, and he said, we've got to get that guy. That's what we have to be concerned about. The fact that you've got people who don't have principles, they just have positions. That's what the difference is between a statesman and a politician. Politicians have positions. Statesmen have principles. They go on to say on this Zero Hedge thing that Julian Assange built WikiLeaks into an organization that acquired the ultimate trust of many people who had access to documents that they felt should be public. Because our government, as I said, hides everything. Things that don't need to be hidden. They hide everything. Why do they do that? Well, it's just as we saw with the House Intelligence Committee. They want to hide things that are going to be embarrassing to them or that might be incriminating to them or that might put them in jail. You know, kind of like Gina Haspel covered up the torture of the CIA. She didn't want you to see the videos of what they did to people. It's okay for Tim Kennedy to go on social media and show somebody pouring water on his face and him pretending that that's what waterboarding is. Oh, yeah, you can see that, but you can't see the videos of what they really did because Gina Haspel covered that up. She deleted that. So, yeah, you can go see what the stunt that Tim Kennedy did, but you're not going to see the real stuff that the CIA did. She covered that up after everybody agreed that it wasn't legal, it wasn't moral, and that it wasn't effective. And they were starting to investigate the CIA. So she obstructed that investigation by deleting that evidence after the fact, even if you think that what she did at the time was legal, moral, and effective. And it never was. She still covered up the stuff. She's still a criminal. And who is she covering up for now? As Rand Paul is asking, what does she know? And when did she know it about the CIA's attempted coup against President Trump? Why is he putting people like this in office? It's absolutely amazing. Julian Assange built an empire that was based on trust. And to do that, he knew that he could never lie. Even the smallest lie would take down everything that they had to do. You know, WikiLeaks has never been proven wrong. They show you the documents. I'm not talking about some anonymous source here, like QAnon, that you can't verify who the individual is, that is speaking in riddles. I mean, what could possibly go wrong with that, right? Putting out intel and saying, talking like Nostradamus. Well, you just must have misinterpreted what I put out there. And you don't know who I am anyway. No, WikiLeaks said, here's the documents. You can see the here are the documents for you to see what Hillary Clinton was doing in Libya and what the motivation was in Libya. Yeah, they didn't want him setting up a gold-backed currency in competition to the European and American central banks, did they? Had to be taken out. That was even more important than the nuclear weapons. Because he got rid of the nuclear weapons. He didn't have the nuclear weapons. He was coming up with something far more dangerous to the powers that be. He was threatening the banks. So that had to come down. Julian Assange exposed Hillary Clinton's motivation against Gaddafi and the state establishment. And so they have him in that prison, the Ecuadorian prison, and they may put him out to be arrested, even though these alleged rape charges were never substantiated. He was never interrogated by Swedish law enforcement. They eventually dropped the charges, but the British government continues to maintain their vigil out there, ready to arrest him the moment that he is thrown out. So we go back to the CIA and to Gina Haspel. And even Fox News, you know, better late than never. Even Fox News is now pointing out that our government armed and trained ISIS in Syria. I gave the U.S. trucks and ammunition to Al-Qaeda. And then they say the chaotic U.S. effort to arm Syrian rebels. Oh, yeah, they're still not there. Fox News still won't tell you the truth. Oh, it was a chaotic effort. And we were trying to arm the rebels. Chaotic. Yeah, mistakes were made. Give me a break. You know that Obama and McCain, you know exactly what they were doing. We've reported this for a long time. Going back to the 2013 Syrian gas attack, we were talking about how we were arming ISIS and rebels. And we were doing it out of Libya, the arms bazaar that was created. But Fox News comes out and says, U.S. military equipment and ammunition sent to Syria as part of a failed Obama administration plan to find and arm moderate forces to defeat ISIS. Give me a break. Give me a break. They never were moderate. We told everybody they weren't moderate, and now they admit, well, you know, we thought they were moderate, but they weren't moderate. Oh, so you're claiming incompetence rather than criminal conspiracy. Is that supposed to make me feel better? It's supposed to keep you out of jail, isn't it? Oh, I was just incompetent. Mistakes were made. It was a chaotic situation. I didn't know what I was doing. You know, just like the Pentagon lost $6 trillion. 3 times the gross national product of the United Kingdom. It wasn't criminal. They didn't steal it. They just misplaced it. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and I just want to say, as we were looking in the last segment, now they're finally admitting that they were giving trucks ammunition to Al-Qaeda. He was like, yeah, I did it. I didn't know what I was doing. It was chaotic. We didn't know. We thought we were arming good guys, and we were giving it to Al-Qaeda. And so I want to ask this genius that was so tough on terrorism, Gina Haspel, when she was torturing people, didn't she find out some information that would allow her to tell who the good guys were and who were Al-Qaeda or ISIS? She was absolutely clueless. You want to tell us that this torturing was effective? I don't think so. You can't even tell who the players were there, Gina? You and the upper brass of the CIA, you people are clueless or you're criminals. I think you're criminals. You know, but even though you don't know, you can't tell who you're arming in ISIS. You still kill people with drones. Maybe that's why you bomb a wedding party in Yemen and create and recruit a whole bunch of terrorists for their side. That's the blowback that happens when you do that kind of crap. And because you can't tell who you're bombing and killing with drones, you can't tell who you're arming with trucks and missiles and other weapons, you're now going to push this off on Google and other software companies. You're going to let them kill by algorithm. Yeah, that's right. Algorithmic warfare. They're going to identify the targets. That will provide some plausible deniability for Gina Haspel and the rest of these criminals. Oh, we didn't know who they were. That was a software bug. Mistakes were made. It was chaotic. We don't know. Fog of war, all that kind of stuff. It's just about plausible deniability for these criminals. So here's another question that Rand Paul wants to know. What did she know about the coup against Trump, the attempted coup that was being run by the CIA, by Brennan? Did she know anything about that? You know, she was working in close quarters there with Brennan when he was feeding Obama unverified information from the Steele dossier. And now he's been caught lying about his 2017 testimony. As Zero Hedge points out, two former colleagues of ex-CIA Director John Brennan, but those colleagues aren't Gina Haspel. So there's some other people in the CIA who are blowing the whistle. You know, John Kiriakou went to jail for blowing the whistle on the CIA torture, but Gina Haspel goes to the top of the CIA because she covered it up. That's what's really going on here, folks. That's the depth of corruption in our government, even under Trump. That people who obstructed justice, who covered up crimes, get promoted to the highest level of the CIA. And the people who have a moral conscience, who expose the lawbreakers, they're the ones, the only ones who go to jail. Everybody else gets a free pass and a promotion. This is disgusting. So you got two former colleagues of the ex-CIA director, John Brennan, have contradicted his claim that the unverified Steele dossier was not part of the U.S. intelligence community assessment on the Russian interference. The anti-Trump memos made up the dossier. They did factor into the intelligence community's assessment. And Brennan was feeding this stuff to Obama. We know that now. Did Gina Haspel know that? If not, why not? Again, is she incompetent or criminal? Oh, don't ask those questions. She's tough on terrorists, says President Trump. He tweeted that out again today. He really wants her in that position. You know, we look at this situation. The BBC, they looked up one of the guys that was involved in Abu Ghraib. And he said, I hated myself after the abuse at Abu Ghraib. Does Gina Haspel hate herself for covering up the information? Does she hate herself for what she did? Does she have any conscience about this? Did she deny any of this stuff? No. People kept pushing her on that. Kept pushing her on. You saw the hearings where she wouldn't put that back. As they point out, the BBC, they looked this guy up, a big bear-sized guy, Jimmy Civets, hunches his shoulders when he walks across the car park of a pizzeria in Pennsylvania, trying to make himself look smaller. He shoves his hands in his pockets as he stands next to me outside where we can speak freely about the cruelty of his past without fear of being overheard. The Abu Ghraib scandal broke in 2004 when photos taken by him and other soldiers at the prison were revealed to CBS News. Pictures showed naked prisoners heaped into a pyramid, forced to simulate sex acts, to adopt humiliating poses. One showed a U.S. soldier, Lindy England, holding a prisoner on a strap made to look like a leash. Another showed a hooded man standing on a box holding electrical wires. Civets was sentenced to a year in prison for dereliction of duty for counts related to taking a picture and failing to stop the mistreatment of detainees. Maybe that's why she covered this stuff up. You know, a guy who was a Korean War veteran that they talked to, 86 years old, he said, yeah, he's a really nice young man. He says he believes that Civets was just following orders and that the punishment was unfair. I don't think it was. See, the problem is, at the Nuremberg trial, we heard from the prisoners who ran the concentration camps that they were just following orders. You know, we have seen with various experiments where you have psychological experiments from the middle of the 20th century, Will people do what they know is wrong? Will they torture or even kill other people? We even had it reproduced. The Milford experiment. We even had it reproduced on French television in front of a live audience. People willing to admit, willing to administer a lethal dosage of electricity to an actor who claimed that they were getting electrocuted because somebody in a position of authority told him to do that. And then we also had the, Ashford experiments. I think it's Ashton experiments. About the same time, showing that even when somebody was shown pictures of lines and say, which line is shorter? Even though the answer was very obvious, most people would go along with the majority of the crowd, even when they were given the wrong answer. So there's peer pressure and there's the pressure of authority. And that's why it is so imperative that the people that we select for leaders be moral leaders. Moral leaders, not people like Gina Haspel. You look at this situation, they went to jail for something that was far less than what Gina Haspel and the CIA did. Yeah, it was sadistic, it was disgusting what they did, taunting these soldiers, but it wasn't. Some of these people died from some of the torture that was there, and it wasn't what Gina Haspel and these people did. And these were just photographs that sent these people to jail. What do you think would happen to Gina Haspel and the other CIA people if those videos that Gina Haspel destroyed had gotten out and were shown? She had to destroy those things before Julian Assange could get them and put them out on WikiLeaks, because eventually somebody with a conscience who said this must not happen again would have exposed it. Somebody like maybe John Kiriakou, who did expose what they did, but you didn't see the pictures. And I think that's one of the reasons why Gina Haspel isn't sitting in jail instead of sitting at the top of the CIA. She should be in jail. But it's the people like her, the people like Comey, the people like McCabe, the people like Hillary Clinton, they all get a free pass, don't they? And it's the little guys who violate the small laws, like the guy on the submarine. They're the ones who go to jail. They're the ones that they make an example out of. Our laws have become like the spider web that lets the big bees get through, but it catches the small flies. You and I are the small flies. And you better think about that before you start applauding on social media President Trump's decision to put Gina Haspel at the top of the CIA. She's a criminal. She belongs in jail with Hillary Clinton. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Waging war on corruption. It's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and it's appropriate we've got the Perry Mason theme here because we've got our news decoder and legal analyst, Lionel, is going to be joining us in this segment and for the rest of the program. Before we go to Lionel, real quickly, I want to tell you about the products that support and keep us independent. And those are the products that we sell at InfoWarsStore.com. Yes, we got a lot of health products there, preparedness products, things like books, T-shirts, movies, so forth. It's a wide variety of products. I want to tell you about some of the ones that are on special real quickly. We have Survival Shield X2, our nascent iodine. That is now 25% off. We have all of the Super Blue fluoride-free products with nano silver to fight virus as well as bacteria that creates gum disease, leads to tooth loss and to heart disease. All those Super Blue dental products are 50% off. Great time right now to try the toothpaste. We have that in a couple of different flavors, as well as the mouthwash and the immune gargle spray. You can actually use it to clean your hands as well, not just to spray into your mouth as a immune mouthwash. Gargle. We also have Bodies off 50% off, and that is our turmeric formula. And it has a with turmeric and the other ingredients in there, it supports your flexibility, your mobility, your joints, and your immune system. Bodies is 50% off. Take a look at the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Big savings on DNA Force Plus as 50% off, and many other items. We really do appreciate and need your support at InfoWarsStore.com. All right, Lionel can be found on YouTube. His YouTube channel is Lionel Nation, and you can also see him on Twitter. He's very active there, at Lionel Media. Thank you for joining us, Lionel. What do you think about Gina Haspel?
Well, you know, I want to get to that, but first I must do something, a proem of sorts.
I like the fact very much that you had this morning made an off-the-cuff reference to Quick Draw McGraw, which I thought was fantastic. Now, probably the only person, and I was thinking, I'm saying, I know, because this is why we speak primarily for you and I to connect to a time that most have forgotten or never knew existed. But I
El Shabaab. You know, every time I can't ever hear that Somali terrorist group El Shabaab without thinking about El Kabong.
No, right. Well, and for other reasons during the 70s, the Kabong, but I digress. Let me just also tell you, in terms of bad PR, you know, David, I'm no genius, but I would say, you know, when you're running for something, you might not want to say, oh, and by the way, all Muslims hate you. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Not good. Harold Stassen would not have approved. And just like...
Even saying first as a Michigan gubernatorial candidate for the Democrats, who's a Muslim, he says, well, you may not hate all Muslims, but all Muslims right. hate you. I mean, he just compounded it there. He didn't just say all Muslims hate you. He said, you don't hate them, but they hate you.
And you also want to say something to the effect of, would you repeat that, please? I think my bell tone needs some new batteries. Would you say that? It's just like, for example, Iran. Iran, instead of saying, come on, what are you doing? They say, death to a million of the flag burning. It's like, no.
On the floor of the legislature, no less. I mean, it was the legislators that were burning the American flag and chanting right. death to America. Yeah, not a great PR stunt there.
Speaking of PR stunts, by the way, there was no segue. You know, David, there's something called the doctrine of severability. It's a legal term, and it means something like this. If you and I are involved in a contract, and let's say a portion of it is no good, it's void, it's unenforceable, whatever. We don't throw everything away. We say, well, we just pull that out and maybe fix it, but we just continue working, you know, and we're all in agreement. You know, sometimes there are people, many of us, who we say, you know, I like what he says. I don't agree with this policy, and that does not negate necessarily our friendship or my belief in you. It's like when you buy an album and you first heard Sgt. Pepper, you didn't say, well, I don't like three. Ah, the hell with the Beatles. No, it doesn't work that way. So consequently...
Yeah, you'll never find anybody that you agree with 100%. You know, that's why, you know, when you look at politicians, it's like, oh, okay, this guy is 60%, that one's 70%, she's 0%. Who would I be talking about?
And I get these all the time. People will tell me, did you know Alex Jones said this? It's like, well, why don't you call Alex Jones? What am I supposed to do? Do you want to know he said that? You know that so-and-so, I got this call from him. You know that so-and-so is not a truther? I said, well, that son of a, you know, I said, what am I, okay, it's okay. All right.
That's right. That we'll have our disagreements.
Right. Now, that being said, when it comes to torture, you know, David, far be it from me, where I'm thinking, and I'm so stupid because I think to myself, you know, I'm probably the only person who agrees with this. How many people against torture?
Well, they don't put it out there usually. Usually they say, well, it's intense interrogation. Or they even say this, Lionel, in the Senate hearings, they said EIT. You can't even say enhanced interrogation anymore. But you know what? When McCaskill endorsed her, she said she used the word torture. She said, well, yeah, she tortured in the past, but I like her. I mean, you talk about somebody putting their foot in the mouth. Well, that's about as bad as what the Democrat candidate for governor in Michigan said.
Years ago, when I was prosecuting, we had a local ordinance that dealt. We had a big problem with women who sold hot dogs in bikinis. It was a big problem. So the legislature came up trying to define what was the butt. It was the funniest thing, EIT, anal cleft, but the periphery of this. So sometimes, let's just call it, it's called torture. That's number one. Number two, look, I am irreligious, and I know you are a man of God and a Christian, and I think both of us agree. I cannot speak for Jesus Christ or anybody, but I think, and correct me, in this Judeo-Christian country, I think if I said, JC, let me ask you a question. Torture. I'm not into it. I know a little bit about it. You know, you probably read about it. It was in all the papers. And I don't really want capital punishment either. So I'd say, okay, that's the second thing. Number three, is it efficacious? Does it really give us, and what they always do, David, they always give you this, kind of like this Alan Dershowitz, let's say, this example that will never occur. Let's say there's a child, a girl, your daughter, who's in a shallow grave, and the oxygen is about to and in 5 minutes, and you have the killer. And if he's going to tell you the location of the shallow grave, and the only way he would do this is for you to torture him with a ball peen hammer and a blowtorch. Would you stop it? I say, okay.
Yeah, the ticking time bomb scenario, the 24 scenario. You're Kiefer Sutherland, right? You know, that's a scenario for fiction. And we had a letter that 109 retired generals and admirals said, we don't believe that this is effective, and we believe that it is immoral and illegal.
And it's efficacy, and it's efficacious, and that's, or not efficacious. You know, years ago, I remember hearing something where, and don't ask me where I watch these YouTube things, stories, but it seemed legit. And it was somebody who went through, I forget where it was, after some particular victory or defeat, depending upon your perspective, and they drove to the town in this big Jeep, and they said, we will not torture you. If you give up, no problem. And all of a sudden, things opened up. And go, are you sure? I say, oh my God, there was a... Well, that's the way it works. Now, let's go back, and there's a reason for this.
Kind of like Mars Attacks. We come in peace, and then they open up fire. Yeah.
This is a rather lengthy prolegomenon, but bear with me. There's this... Remember years ago, they had interrogator of Saddam Hussein. Kind of like now we have the 1,500th person who actually killed UBL, you know, Osama bin Laden.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How many are there? You're like, this is a 12th book. No, I killed him. All right, fine. But this
guy, I was the guy who took him off of dialysis. So he's the original killer of bin Laden.
I'm the doctor who diagnosed him with Marfan syndrome. Oops, maybe I shouldn't say that. Okay. So anyway... So there was a fellow, I remember, he was 60 Minutes or something, and he was the interrogator of Saddam. And he said he came in, and he had a little plastic cookies that his wife made, and Saddam says, what are those? He said, well, these? Oh, it's these little plum things. He goes, oh, my, I love those. I haven't seen those, and they're really big in Iraq. He said, you want one? Said, yeah. It's like the Mean Joe Green T-shirt, you know, the commercial. And he sat down, he said, these are great. He says, you know, they don't make cookies like this anymore. And they start talking. And you also have these people who come in and they show respect to the person. You try to get them to tell you things, not by getting a blowtorch and a soldering iron, number 9 axle grease. Doesn't work
That's right. Yeah. Lieutenant General McHenry, who's now been banned from Facebook for criticizing John McCain, said, well, he proves that torture works. It's like, no, they prove that it doesn't work. They got him to say anything, unless McHenry is saying that what he said for the Vietnamese is actually true. I don't think it was true. I think they got him to say anything they wanted. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Lionel. Again, you can find Lionel on YouTube. His channel is Lionel Nation. You can also find him on Twitter at Lionel Media. And Lionel, as we're going to break, you correctly pointed out, you know, the questions about the efficacy of enhanced interrogation, the torture tactics that Gina Haspel is being accused of covering up, because the cover-up, the destruction of evidence, happened well after people had determined that that wasn't effective, it wasn't moral, it wasn't legal, and so forth. And I think Rand Paul has made a brilliant point here. Even before the vote comes up, or even before he does anything to filibuster the vote on Gina Haspel, he asked the question, was she in on the CIA, NSA, FBI coup against President Trump? What did she know? When did she know it? If she didn't know anything about it, why not? I mean, she's such a genius and she's at such a high level in the department. Why didn't she know about any of this stuff? Because we've now seen that Brennan, who has been opposing President Trump as CIA director and subsequent to that as a commentator, one of his most vehement opponents, was caught lying. And other people in the CIA, lower down than Gina Haspel, knew about this. So if she knew about it, why didn't she say anything about it? And if she didn't, why doesn't she know about that if she's so confident?
You know, I don't think it's within the cosmic wheelhouse of American people. I'm very sorry. And by the way, I am David Knight, just so people will know that's what my name, my lower third, says. Do not be confused with that. But But there's a but I wish you would have said something. She says, "Oh no, no, I did it. I followed orders. You betcha. It's not up to me to establish these procedures. There's a lot of things which, very frankly, I would have tweaked a little bit differently. But you cannot have an organization in which leaders decide what orders they do and do not follow." I mean, she could have gotten off the hook basically and said that to make her think like, well, I kind of think that certain torture, as long as it doesn't leave a mark or she could have just said that.
Yeah, she didn't. But
I don't think I don't think anybody honestly cares about this or realizes it. And I don't know if anybody, very frankly, it goes back to a bigger question. Who is even behind President Trump? Who is behind him? I got to tell you something. There is so much wrong. There is so much wrong. And I will say this, and I've said it a million times. Unless and until Hillary Clinton is arrested for anything, we're wasting our time. Because America needs something, because they're too busy worrying about this stupid wedding Saturday. This stupid, I'm just so tired of it. And also, what about this? Is it Yanni? Is it whatever? Would you shut up? What is it about? Today's National Toast Day. I swear to you. So I'm trying to work my way through the distractions. So in order to get Americans' attention, I'm sorry, I hope I mean no disrespect by this, Hillary Clinton has to be arrested for something. Name your poison. Name it. I don't understand it. So this is one of...
But instead, they're going to arrest Julian Assange for exposing her crimes. That's what's going to happen.
I do not understand this. Do we remember Daniel Ellsberg? Daniel Ellsberg, the Pentagon Papers. We had a movie, right? I mean, the lefty was like, oh, Tom Hanks, this is great. Pentagon Papers. What do you think that is? He's Assange. And and when I hear these ridiculous stories about Oliver Stone may be involved with who the leaks of the DNC, Seth Rich, I'm not Columbo. Yeah. What are you? Do we just, David, I got to tell you something, too. I know I'm going off in a million directions, but that's why I love this show. How do we not remember things? To wit, last week or so, Joy Reid. Joy Reid said that, and she said that she was xenophobic and anthropomorphic and misandrist, and she did this, and she wrote this, and she suggested, well, I think time travelers went back and created the blog. And then we just forgot. We just said, oh, well, and then it's like diseases, mad cow disease, E. coli, this and that, gone. Next, we have the attention span of a gnat. So what I want to do is, this is all great, this is all terrific, but somebody needs to do this. Imagine, David, you are someplace, and all of a sudden your phone goes berserk, and you're wondering, what happened? And you look, breaking news, Hillary Clinton arrested. For whatever, I don't care what it is. Removing the tag off a pillowcase. I don't care. It will send, CNN will go into DEFCON 1 or 4. I get them confused. The entire left-wing fraud will go nuts. They'll go crazy. They won't be able to speak. And meanwhile, Trump just moves forward. Now I'd like to talk about North Korea. Who can talk about North Korea? Because I do not, David, every day I'm getting emails from her and Chelsea saying, would you like to meet us and give us more money? And I'm saying, how is this woman not arrested? President
still
Trump.
Raising money. Still raising money for her foundations, her crooked foundations.
And every night, I can't watch Sean Hannity, good friend of mine, known him for 20-something years. It's like, Sean, if you give me that TikTok business one more time, one more TikTok. And then you've got this one. You got Judge
Napolitano. I think the clock is running in reverse at this point. in the Twilight Zone where that clock goes floating through space.
And these legal experts, Judge Napolitano, great, wonderful jurist. Well, he can't do that. Well, why don't you tell him? What is going on here? So I don't understand. So going back to the torture thing, John McCain actually says to me, by the way, the 2000 John McCain is a little bit different than this version. And let me also say something. I will never, in my worst day, ever laud or laugh at somebody dying of brain cancer. Are you kidding?
Exactly.
And
talk about karma, you know, it's like that kind of comes around.
The White House never said this. Another thing, too, is they were laughing about that. That's not what happened. So in the scheme of this, I'm thinking to myself, let me just go back in time. Years ago, when I first got into talk radio, 30 years ago this year, I said, I got a great idea. David, I swear to God, I should go blind if I'm lying. I said, I'm against capital punishment for a variety of reasons. But I said, I'm going to go on and say, well, if we can kill people, you're going to love this. If we can kill people, why don't we just torture them because we're not killing them? I mean,
there you go.
Killing them's okay. Now, I said this as a joke. And people 30 years ago, some would say, well, that was a great idea. But a lot of people said, no, wait a minute, hold it. And they thought about this. No, wait, no, you can't. We don't. No, that's punishment versus this versus finding out. Oh, and by the way, they'll also tell you the torture is not to punish, but it's to elicit confessions. Excuse me, David, I'm not hitting you with a ball peen hammer for a punishment. I'm hitting you with this repeatedly to elicit. What difference does it make? I'm crippled from this. So anyway, 30 years ago, I'm joking. If you would have told me that one day, and Alan Dershowitz, remember when he had his torture warrant? Yeah. I'm thinking, we've lost our minds. Seriously, we've lost.
Well, earlier in the program, I talked about how Bill Maher had Killer Mike on, the rapper, and they were talking about guns. And they said, you know, this is kind of stupid because we've got people on the left saying that Trump is Hitler, but give him all the guns because that's what they're talking about, confiscation. So only the guy that's in charge of the government would have all the guns. But, you know, on the right, what we see is the, you know, people on the right say, are you kidding? You don't want to give all the guns to the government because the government is evil. But let's let them imprison and torture anybody that they say is an enemy of the state. Right. I mean, that's what we've got on both sides here.
It's schizophrenic, with all due respect to schizophrenics. So I don't understand where this is going in. Now, another thing, too, is we need to see this one day. We need to see. Remember the old days during the Vietnam War? You know, David, we're the same age. Remember, we remember this big time. You know what really changed everything? When grandmothers and mothers and priests and nuns said, this war, this is stupid. All of a sudden, it wasn't dirty people, dirty haired, you know, barefoot.
That's right.
Pop,
that's right.
All right. So
didn't
if all of a sudden,
identify with those guys in the streets, yeah.
Precisely. But if all of a sudden there was a group, and forget the NRA. Would you stop? I don't know anybody in the NRA. I don't know where this NRA and guns thing came from. But speaking of guns, since we just mentioned it, if somebody came forward and said, I'm for the Second Amendment, all of a sudden, you know, somebody, you know, Aunt B, bless her heart, I'm for the Second Amendment, a cop, and not the usual subjects, but moms and to talk about people. You know what they say? Because I know we're on to guns now, but they say, you know, when you have seconds to act and the police are minutes away, here in upstate New York, for example, upstate, there are places where there are no police. There are places that are so remote, there are no police. Try this. So what I'm saying is we need to sit down and teach critical thinking of the American population. Number two, reacquaint them with the fact that these little bumper sticker moments are a waste of time. Go back to what we really are. David, we're the good guys. We don't torture. We don't torture. We don't.
That's the big issue, isn't it, Lionel? Because you, in every war, you got to make sure that you don't become the monster that you have set out to destroy. And if we give that power, just like, you know, we're talking about the guns or the ability to imprison and torture people, if you give that power, that unchecked power to the government, if the government becomes a terrorist by adopting terrorist tactics, then we have lost everything at that point. Well, that's all the time we've got. Thanks for joining us, and thank you, Lionel. And again, you can find Lionel on YouTube, Lionel Nation, on Twitter, @LionelMedia. I'm David Knight, and that's our program for today. Thank you for listening.